No, don't put the sexy eyes on it.
Do you guys know the Mountain Goats, the band?
Yeah.
If I make a Mountain Goats reference, is that too obscure?
He plays magic.
I think you people already like have goats. Made a Mountain
you
Goats
You have already
reference.
Made a Mountain Goats reference, too.
So,
oh, yes, was, it in the, too was it in the year-end episode?
It could have been.
It might have
well,
been.
Maybe I'm doing the same. Maybe this is a tradition now, then. I'm going to do it. I don't even like the Mountain Goats very much, to be honest.
Do you have a problem with his voice?
Yeah, actually, mostly, probably.
Every single person I've ever heard talk about the Mountain Goats.
Like, okay, what is the thing again? And I'll definitely tell you if you've done it.
I like to be casting spells cost 3 in an Undercity Initiative dungeon. How does this win? Where do I begin in an Undercity Initiative dungeon? I'd ask my opponent to concede an Undercity dungeon with me. I'd like to be casting spells cost 3 in an Undercity Initiative dungeon.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold Legacy Podcast. It's going to make it through this year if it's one hit from an unblocked Merit Lage. If it's our opponent putting in Thassa's Oracle with only 2 cards in their deck. If it's a Grindstone activation and somehow all our cards are the exact same color. I don't know how that happens, but it fucking happens. If it's you get hit by a Delver approximately 6 times and maybe you fetched like 3 times. We're going to make it through this year if it kills us. And it almost killed us. I'm here as always, like a host, Jack. See, that's a fucking bad one. Felt good in my head.
I was letting it go. I was trying to think
it was like
about
a change
some...
of format, you know? I was trying to like...
I was trying to think of some like US? Double Merit Lage 2020 also joke, but I couldn't pull it together in time.
We're going to make it through this year if our opponent makes Grizzlebrand and they draw 14 cards. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. We're done here. I see.
Just an early scoop on 2023. We're calling it right now.
3 days in. Let's be honest. 10 once you hear this.
It's like when someone plays a Teferi against you, Quinn, and you just concede on the spot.
I just don't want to play that game.
Yeah. Because you can't. Because it won't let you.
Not the way I mean, it likes to play Hearthstone.
Medically mm-hmm. assisted concession.
Some people like that game. also here, Brendan, you've been talking. With co-host Brendan McBain. McBain, how's it going?
I have been talking. Hey, guys. I guess it's officially 2023. Here we are.
Still kicking.
We did it. We made
it. We
did
it. This was like when we started this, I'm pretty sure like on our mission statement somewhere, we did have like a make it to 2023 as like a stretch goal for our patrons.
And we had no idea how dark it would get. I'm not even talking about magic right now either.
Like, world can only go up from here.
Yeah.
Well,
world's always improving.
Not according to scientific predictions, but I mean, this year might be better than last year, I hope, but you know, long term,
it'll find its way.
Why don't we clean old house?
You know what is good this year that wasn't happening for most of the other years? Paper magic events. Now, let me tell you, Connections back at it again with the monthly. Legacy events on the first Monday of every month, except this month because McBain bullied them.
Fuck, I did not.
It's so good. Like yesterday, I was off work. I could just like putter around my house and go to play some Legacy.
The perfect day.
No, you would have been like, "Oh, we're cubing." Sorry, yeah,
we wouldn't have cubed if the Legacy was running.
Shut the fuck.
So, January 9th at the Connection, and then. The following first Monday of every month at 6:30, they're doing the monthlies, 20 proxy limit, you know, low stakes, good times. I think that's the other tagline. Connections, unfortunately, is a bit far for me personally to get to on a Monday, you know, living out in the country as I do. But always nice to see more stuff on a recurring basis happening here.
It's like 2 minutes from Highway 1.
ugh. You think I want to take the highway and get somewhere by 6:30?
Don't you have to like go you're to, going to Gaines traffic. Your office? Like, what are you? Come on. Ugh. Make it happen, Jeff.
To be seen. To be seen, listener. In other news, as far as what do you call these medium-sized events, I guess. Laughing Dragon is having another 1K at their store in Issaquah on January 28th. I, at this point in time, am assuming I will not be able to attend that one, but maybe can wiggle in a little speed down, you know, 03 a tournament, speed home. We'll see.
Well, didn't you like almost top eight the last one?
Yeah, I've had a lot of almost slightly.
Yeah. It's better than most of us, so.
Yeah, that's true.
My results have been decisive.
Yeah, yours have been decisive in their own positive way, right? Like, outside of, like, X and O, the best record you can have is O and X.
Some would disagree with us, but I'm with you.
I guess I'll just add one other piece for housekeeping. I figured I'd put it here. There's a new Legacy podcast out, which I'm sure you gentlemen podcast consumers have already listened to, but it's called Accumulated Nonsense. And it's with a couple of Legacy aficionados. So Curtis Dorian or Gristlebrand, Anthony Verde, LaVerde, is that? Yeah, LaVerde. Grapeshot NH, and then Will Godsey, UWMHO5. Sounds like an old like submarine name or something. No? No one on that one?
Starboard bow.
Okay.
And he was my co-host, the Submariner.
I was thinking of like, you know, Das Boot or the U570 or whatever. But anyway, they've got three episodes out already. And the most recent one, they discuss Curtis's back-to-back challenge wins with Depps.
That is insane. I saw those tweets and it's like, oh, back-to-back. Like, that's a ridiculous thing.
Yeah. There was a bit of like humbleness from Curtis when I listened to it, and that he's like, you know, I think it's really a time thing. Like, who's going to actually like just throw away a whole weekend to do this and to meet the time zone requirements to do so? He kind of said, you know, that I think that's a pretty big factor of why it hasn't been done more, but I think that's a pretty big dose of humbleness. Like, I think it's a huge feat to be able to do that. And especially playing a deck that isn't regarded as like the top, like two or three decks of the format. I think that's pretty huge.
I do have to interest too, from a, like a notoriety perspective. When I saw this, I was like, wait, you're like, I mean, not to diminish the actual feat, but be like, you play Depps and your Twitter handle's Grizzlebrand _, you got to change that, buddy. But it's Deanne Sulver.
But rebranded?
One of the original, like, reanimator source, like, please, Deanne Sulver, tell me what I should do with my sideboard. Please, please, I'm taking Grizzlebrand to a tournament. I need to know what the meta's like. So that's why his Twitter handle actually very appropriate.
Yeah, he's got Gristlebrand _. That's like one off the ultimate. So
that's just, I think he mentioned this on the source or like Gristlebrand _. Now that I like, when I put it together, I'm like, oh wait, I remember this. And it's just like Gristlebrand, like there's like two tweets and I'm like, oh, what a waste.
Someone's got to go find that person, you know, Elon, pay them $100.
Let me claim it.
Please, I'll subscribe to Twitter Blue.
Interesting. Like, I have listened to their three episodes. It is in their mission statement about basically avoiding talking about Delver at all costs. And they're just like, yeah, we don't want to talk about that. Screw that deck. Everyone talks about Delver. The only time it comes up is like if it's like a particular deck like beating Delver in some way, but they don't actively try to like spike out and talk about Delver, which is nice. And then the other piece is they kind of get into these weird like play pattern discussions and just like interesting play patterns. And so there's a lot of like random tangents that you kind of go down where it's like, oh, well, you know, this could come up with this, and then you could do this play pattern. And it's kind of, it's the kind of bullshit that I think you would appreciate, Jeff, where you're like, oh, yeah, I would do that.
Verbally describing a house of cards.
Exactly.
Are there any podcast, like legacy podcasts, you guys think of that actually talk about Delver a lot? I'm trying to think. I just, it made me think about that because I'm like,
not that I listen to.
Like sometimes Julian will play it. You know,
no,
like,
I if you ask me, I would think of Amarok, Bob Wong, and Daniel Gochel.
Mm. That was my assumption.
That would be my go-to
punters.
Delver.
The good players podcast. Yeah. Not that those other players aren't good, but you know.
Yeah, screw this DNS solver guy, like back-to-back challenger.
Well, I like Julian, and but you know, like.
Yeah, Callum, it's not like he's ever won with paint or anything, whatever.
Elo Punters is like the one where I'm like, oh, yeah, these guys, they're very serious.
Now that we kind of mentioned all the other podcasts and their winnings, I'm feeling a little inadequate, guys. We haven't put up any good results lately. yeah, so I just wanted to kind of share that with you guys. It's one more cast. I guess it's kind of, we had a gap in the podcast metagame since leaving Legacy retired. So I guess they're kind of filling that gap so we can maintain a full bingo card for the podcast bingo card that we all play. I don't know where I'm going with that. Save me.
Why don't we move forward to the main topic of today's podcast?
I just thought you were describing a new Unfinity card.
We'll get to that in a moment, Jeff.
We'll get to at least one of those, yeah. But as we enter the year 2023, as you mentioned, McBain, we want to look back on the year that was 2022. Talk about mostly our favorite things. If you're someone who hates negativity, I want to mention there's only like two real like spirally subjects that we have or categories. Mostly want to talk about some of the stuff we really liked in 2022, just our overall impressions. And if you are someone who is a hater, we have two categories for you, for the haters out there. If you want the toxicity, there's just a little little sprinkling in there for you.
The toxicreens. So if we go over to
another foreshadowing, good one. That's good.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. If we go over to, you'll know that it was unplanned and it was just a random digression, which we're prone to.
Why don't we start though, just in general, overall impressions of 2022 in like the Magic context?
I will say, Jeff, you did generally step up your in-person metagame.
That's right. I faded for a while throughout the summer. I missed a lot of events, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I don't know. I think I played more different decks this year than other years, and that's a total of like three.
Are you counting
I played
that?
So many different decks this year, actually.
No, are you counting that one with all the elementals in it?
Okay, no, I'm not counting the like Negan pitch elementals deck. I should be, because that deck was sick. Yeah. Negan pitches to all three elementals that are in the deck. It's so good. Yeah, I don't know. Overall impressions for 2022, everything kind of continued on the trend that it was. There was a lot of weird and bad decisions and new stuff printed a billion times. I was trying to look up some of the sets this year, and just on the MTG Goldfish page for the release dates, I hit like Control F and put 2022, and something's probably like repeated, but there was 15 results, which is like insane.
It's ridiculous. So, the amount, that's one thing, the amount of like stuff that came out almost mm-hmm. like beat me into submission. I do think, thinking back to like since we've done this podcast, I think it was like the best year for like legacy gameplay since we started the podcast. Like, I think this is better than Renin 6 era, and I think it's better than Oko era.
Yeah. Yeah. The sad thing is, like, I don't think we've had a lot of good standards to, like, you know, oh, man, do you remember? Like, there's none of that, you know? Wow. Do you remember that week before, you know, this happened? Like, that was sick. Like, that's as good as it gets.
Death Rate Shaman and Gitaxian Probe and all that was in Delver. It was so good.
Pyromancer Probe Cabal Therapy. Ooh.
Ooh, I love those days.
Yeah.
Death Rate Shaman's kind of fun. Like, you had to have one, but like,
be a 1/2.
You know,
shouldn't be a 1/2.
Many problems with it, but like, you know, bashing each other with a big blue dragon, not that fun.
Okay, guys, we only promised two negative digressions.
Oh, shit,
McBain, 2022. What'd you think?
I really enjoyed the return of paper play in a much more like full experience, rather than being like this kind of rare thing that might happen as it was in 2021. Like, this was really a return to larger events. We attended Puget Sound. Most of us attended Puget Sound Battleground 4 or 3. It was 4. We attended Eternal Weekend, and we attended like some smaller legacy events. I went to some old school stuff. Like, it felt like a normal-ish year in that regard. And for that, I'm ever grateful. It definitely reminds me of like the gathering aspect to it, particularly like Eternal Weekend. That's kind of where we got our start with all of this years ago. And, you know, there was no plane delays, almost plane delays, but there was no plane delays. And it was a great time, whether we were at the event having fun or not at the event having fun. It was both Magic and the Gathering. So A+.
That's true. A return to some like major events was sick. I mean, you and I both going to Puget Sound Battleground, you know, the overnight trips down to other parts of Washington for like Laughing Dragon. I think there's a Mox in there somewhere, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of great stuff. And like you said, capping the year off with Eternal Weekend. Very, very good. I just really need like Stronghold or somebody to pick up like a local, you know, 1K or something. Some kind of medium tier.
We did get the return of the Harry Wong Memorial Classic.
We did. But, you know, I'm dying for that, like, every other month. You know, every other month, little kind of higher stakes tournament.
Says the fucking Weight Initiative deck.
You're safe now. I didn't own a lot of the expensive cards. Elliot sold his cities and I gave Quinn back his chrome boxes, so I'm shit out of luck.
We touched a bit on the amount of cards that came out, the sheer number of sets and supplementary sets. Thinking of all of those, all 15, did you say? Was that how much it was?
That
probably didn't cover
control
everything.
Control F on the sets page of MTG Goldfish, so not necessarily reliable. But, you know, Jumpstart 2022, a bunch of different commander sets, everything. So many things.
Amongst all those things, though, what were your favorites? McBain, I'm going to start with you.
Of sets? For me, the Kamigawa was like a standout for me. I think that was a really cool set.
Sorry, releases.
Releases of sets?
But, stop. Sorry, I'm trying to lead you to what you wrote in the notes.
A good release.
Well, for releases, I don't know. Like the Warhammer 40K, I really enjoyed. I don't know. I recently got... for Christmas, my brother got me 2 of the pre-built commander decks.
Ooh.
Which was somewhat unexpected.
Which ones?
He's on the ball.
Yeah. I got the Chaos Defiler one and the one with the Toxicroak in it.
Oh, damn.
I know. Yeah, he always actually gets me pretty good gifts.
What did you get him something good? You have to say what it is, but like, would you be like, yeah, thumbs up, I nailed it?
I tried to be like, he went down to like the nerdy degenerate level, and I tried to like push him up with.
So the answer is like, no, you did not.
No, but you're like, oh, here's a 2% match on your ETF contributions.
It was just more like some respectable clothes. Listen,
these are
like
two
that.
Silver coins. They might not look like much, but it's really great value right now.
Look, I got a great deal on this digital artwork of their 45th president.
So yeah, I thought those were sweet, and we even like jammed a couple games over the holidays. As per normal, I brought the unchanged since like 2014 battle box.
And love that it's like, hey bro, you like Magic? Yeah. Do you want to play the worst pre-constructed Magic of all time?
It's so good.
Battle box. I thought you were talking about the pre-cons, the four original Commander pre-cons that you had.
That's also good. Yeah,
yeah. It's not.
Okay, you
closer
weren't
to Magic as Richard Garth with intended than what we do.
Yeah, exactly. And you weren't there for like that. I think Quinn, that game that we played at my place. A few months back. That was probably the greatest game of the pre-con, the 2013 pre-cons that will ever be played. It was pretty amazing. Anyway,
because you guys played cards for an hour and a half, and then somebody cast Insurrection.
It ended with Tristan getting really powerful. He was playing the what deck was it? The Riku deck or something? No, the Reanimate one, the Mimeoplasm deck. And I died with the Riku deck. He killed me. And then Kevin was playing the, what was the other one?
Zedru.
I was Zedru.
And Quinn was Zedru. Good and man, Tristan Quinn. Was like super powerful. And then he killed, Kevin tried to kill him. Tristan killed Kevin. And then it was like Quinn, who was basically doing nothing as the Zedru deck the entire game. And he's like, well, I guess I'm just dead. And he goes to Scoop. I was like, no. Like, you got a brainstorm in your hand. Cast the brainstorm. Like, you might draw Insurrection. And he cast the brainstorm and draws the Insurrection. And I swear to God.
10 mana on hand.
But his face when he drew that Insurrection, like when we called the shot and we're like, draw the Insurrection and you win the game. And he cast brainstorm and draws it. And he looked at me. And it was like, as if it was like he saw Santa Claus or something. He's like, oh my God, he's real. Like, I never believed it, but now I saw it. Like,
I brainstormed, I didn't even shuffle my hand around. It didn't matter.
Yeah, it was just fucking dead. Man. Insurrection. Here you go. Anyway,
what's the answer there again?
Warhammer 40K. We even played a couple games with the commander decks, which was like not amazing because usually one person would just get out ahead and then. It was hard to kind of balance. You needed that third or fourth person, but they were really cool cards. And it was like that, just that right blend of interesting, not overly powerful cards. And I think the Eternal Balance was really good in this. And that they were, again, kind of unassuming, not total ham-fisted designs, but also there's a couple playable cards in there, which is cool.
It's true. There is a lot of cool stuff in there. I know you mentioned Toxicrane and Chaos Defiler. There's the creature guy with like Miracle, but like we make extra copies of it. Zephyrim or something. I know Jason played one of those at Eternal Weekend. It's just like kind of, there's a lot of cool design space that isn't like busted. I think the only like thing that's like stupid to a point is like the Chaos Defiler text being like Council Judgment, you know, where it's like choose on resolution or, you know, choose instead of target, but like it's not like a problem.
No, oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's just
Hexproof
like
sucks.
It's just weird.
And like, you know, anytime True Name Nemesis dies, you know, straight one for one is, yeah, that's just great. It's good.
Yeah,
all right, I'll give you that.
All right, Jeff. Obviously, you had some appreciation for Warhammer 40K Commander, but you have a different answer for this question.
Yeah, I put down Kamigawa. Obviously, I mean, it honestly started 2022 off super strong because that was the first set released in 2022, right? And then the draft format was like an all-timer. I drafted so much on, like, you know, Moto, Arena, like, what symbol are you doing? Is that a zero?
Zero. Or
is
that... I drafted zero. No. I actually I'm kind of kicking myself for that.
Yeah, you fucked up. It was legitimately like one of the best draft formats they've made in a long time. And it had like everything that a good draft format has, where like there's kind of the surface level, you see what's going on. And then, you know, you get another level deeper and you're like, oh, you can actually do some other kind of bullshit. And like, it has all these little dials to turn where you can play like the anvil deck. And, you know, all you're doing is just sacking the same stupid construct and draining them for one, and it rules. And then you also had a good smattering of playable cards in other formats. You know, you had the lands with, what the fuck, they have channel. I do wish instead of channel, they brought back, God, what the fuck is it? It's the stupidest
soul
thing.
Shift.
No. Whoa, God, no. I mean, something like channel. There's a black Korlash that has it from Time Spiral. Grandeur. So like Grandeur, if you have it in play, you can activate it. I think that's a really interesting thing to do with legendary cards is it's literally channel. It's just you can only do it if the thing.
Oh, if you already have the other legend. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that's really neat with some things like legendary lands, because it kind of makes it eliminates the drawback on the other ones, but it also makes the first one worse. And that's a cool thing they could have done. But without
I think, yeah, know, it's a little bit like if you're a monocolor deck,
mm-hmm.
it's just free to be like, I run one of these. Like Painter runs one Sokenzin.
Oh, when you get almost, somebody.
It almost never comes up except when it does, and people like you're running that and you're like, yeah, it's just free. Like
free.
I guess you can wasteland it, but like whatever, you're not gonna waste something, you're gonna waste an Ancient Tomb or Urza Saga. And every once in a while, someone attacks with two unflipped Delvers, and you're like, how about we do a little 2-for-1 trade?
Yeah. And then just stuff like, you know, the return of sagas. Like sagas are super sweet, always lots of fun, unless they're named Urza Saga. Obviously, you know, Fable stuff play in a billion formats. Random other cards like Twin Shot Sniper or like Touch the Spirit Realm. Like there's so many little niche utility things, and nothing really felt too twisted, like too cranked up. And being able to accomplish all of that while being a super fun set to play was great. And it was such a, and like return to like a great plane done in like a cool way. Like it hit so many notes so well.
So it's so not they for kind you, of it's fucked not just up the best legacy set. Too.
They did fuck up just, the plane the first time around. And what did you say, McBain?
You're saying it's not just the best like set for Legacy in 2022. You're just like, it's the best set they did this year.
Absolutely. I think within that, it has a lot of contributions to Legacy and other formats. A lot of them, though, are that kind of like role player, right? Like the glue in between stuff. I don't think any of it smash out a deck. Obviously, we can talk about some in a bit that reinforce things that exist or really set some things in. But like, you know, it isn't like there's a Dragon Rage Channeler or like a Murktide in the set. It's just a bunch of things that do. I think it's how things really should be added to formats. There's a lot of really good cards in there.
100% agree. I feel the addition of little small incremental things that are moving along. And Legacy almost like passively picks them up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, this is kind of interesting for this. And then at a certain point, you reach a critical mass and things shift a little bit, but not this like ham-fisted, you know, here's the new Modern Horizon set. Buckle up, boys. Like,
yeah, exactly.
So
the sagas that now flip into creatures on the third chapter as well. Like, I mean, like, we've seen like kind of like, very rare outside versus saga, very rare, you know, like fringe saga play. But the fact that you like got a thing, it wasn't just like the three chapters went in GNF Valley out of that. I mean, Fable is the most obvious one, but what was like the red
Hidetsugu's,
black one? Hidetsugu consumes all.
Yeah.
Like there'll be a meta game where that comes back. And that's like a totally like, I mean, I'm sure I'll play games where I'm like, oh, it just destroyed me. But I'm not like, that's an unfair card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's like, well designed, it's like got some cool flavor, and it just like flips into like a reasonable body that's not like not too crazy.
It's like a card for the toolbox, right?
Yeah.
You know, pick some up, have them on hand. If like Black Red becomes like Grixis becomes like a popular thing, that's a nice thing they have to like sweep stuff up.
And when that card is good, it is like,
oh, it's so vicious.
It's like, but the it's whole narrow table. Enough,
right? Like you can't just be like, oh, it's crazy against everything. But yeah, what is it? Ooh.
Yeah, the whole table like leans forward and looks over, and they're like, oh, just cleans the board. Yeah, very cool.
Go ahead, McMahon.
I was just gonna say, like, I was really torn between Warhammer 40K. Maybe it's almost like a recency thing, and that like I was literally just holding the cards in my hand and being like, you know, these are pretty cool. But I could, with enough cajoling, Jeff, I could be convinced that Kamigawa was the one.
And 40K did a lot of the same stuff really nicely too. The difference is like 40K being designed for non-standard. I think it's more likely to be like full of dumb shit. And the fact that they didn't go absolutely crazy on that is a lot of points for it.
I'm going to echo McBain. Although I do love Kamigawa, and Jeff, he actually made me like, you know, McBain, you mentioned that recency thing. You know, you think back and appreciate it more even.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, as far as the text box on cards go, Warhammer 40K was my favorite set. We'll get down to it later. My favorite,
I love that flavor text.
Favorite cards. My two favorite cards of this whole year were from that set. And so it was an easy like number one for me. It was also the set, and this will lead into our next, one of the two haters categories that I fucking hated second most, because it took me so long to find Chaos Defilers from a Canadian retailer. Even though I got them before, they're like $10 now, they were like $2. Just no store was opening up enough product to just stock things. And so I loved the cards, and it was just like a way of distributing them that was so like I just want to buy. I don't need like the, you know, the flashy EDH $50 card or whatever. Like, it's great that it exists and that's not a problem, but I just want to buy like the $2, you know, whatever. Or like even finding St. Catharines for like $10 each was like, just like took a while to like to track it down. And I think if you're a small LGS too, it's just like you can't really justify opening that much product either. And they're gonna live like McBain's do in his collection of unmolested commander decks, only touched by human hands with no sleeves on them, but not separated at all. I think too, I've never been a big like lore guy, you know, like, I mean, I think I've you guys have seen in like group chats where I'm like, holy shit, man, I looked at like the art on card made 15 years ago and I'm like, it's sick as hell. And it was like, yes. But all these supplementary sets are really making me appreciate like just the world they created. Like, I think it's really cool, and it like kind of breaks the fourth wall when 40K was like, I mean, it fits a little more. I'm assuming that like D&D fit well. I'm assuming like the you know, other than Gollum, like the Lord of the Rings ones will fit like fairly well into the world. But it's just like kind of jarring to be like, here's Ryu.
Mm-hmm.
In the land of Shivan Dragon, which leads us directly in Optimus Prime. Yes, which actually had a, you know, cool mechanic they made up, but yeah, it's just fucking weird, right? Which leads us into least favorite set of 2022, unanimous. I have it written down here, and McBain, you deleted all the other like options, and so I'll just read what I put in the notes. Fuck Infinity.
Yeah, Jesus.
Hey, we just want you to know, we tested the cards and we thought about Legacy playability, and we want to prove to you that we have no idea how Legacy works, because we're sure that none of them will be eternal playable. He says as he shovels up his sticker deck.
I do, just as a slight tangent, I do want to say props to Brandon. I think it's Hagen. Sure. One of Greg's friends, who at Eternal Weekend was playing an Elves deck, and he was using one of the Elves that had Death Touch and Reach, or it was just Reach, and it was searchable.
It's just Reach. Like, it's an O3.
Just Yeah, it's an 03. Or was it an 04? I thought it could
block. Yeah, it blocks. It like Stonewall's a Delver.
Yeah, 04. Yeah. It's Stonewall's a Delver. So they didn't want to give up like the equity of, oh, you're obviously probably playing this card. Although that's like presuming a lot, thinking like someone might actually figure out what they might be playing. So to do like the whole shebang, they actually had all the sticker cards and all the attractions, and like they'd go through the whole process, and they had like the printed out rules text of like how you go through the procedure, and really just leaned into it in general. So props to him.
I like generally like unsets conceptually. Like I bought a box of the last one. I would have bought a box of this one, except I was like, no, don't do this. So if anyone from Bank of America is listening, you lost a sale. Just FYI. I bought a whole booster.
Lost box. My sale too.
Count them up. The problem is like, we talked this before too, but it's like, they feels like they tried to identify who this is for and just split the difference in a way to make nobody happy. Like the most quintessential thing is the silver border legendary that has partner. And it's like, if you're making this so people can play it in Commander, why the fuck is this card silver border? Like, what is the point? Like, it makes no sense.
Well, listen, because rule zero means you can play anything. Except we know that no one does that. And so we actually made some of them legal, but only the wrong ones.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
Moving on.
From least favorite set to favorite unassuming card of 2022. So I guess there's a little like explanation on this. Something that came out, people were sleeping on it, and it became like, you know, role player or like a breakout card. McBain, so you want to answer?
I just want to say that this kind of term, unassuming, feels like it's kind of come into the lexicon recently for Magic players to kind of describing something. And I think it's a perfect term for this, where like even when you read it three or four times, you're kind of like not really getting it. You're just like, okay, sure. Yeah. Okay. So you make a dude. And then you do the rummage thing. Okay, mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, yeah, that's fine. And then you play against it, and all, it just becomes like real.
Yeah.
Like that experience on multiple cards is, I really enjoy it, honestly. Like sometimes you can just read a card and you're like, that's good. But when you kind of really just experience it and it takes like a couple times to really figure it out, I have been enjoying that.
And I mean, I think like there's design space stuff, but also like mm-hmm. power creep has like kind of like altered the way that if you played Magic for a long time, you think about Magic cards, like just especially like just at a certain CMC. I think now probably people are getting used to like three CMCs where like the heavy shit comes down. But I think especially like Eternal formats for a long time, it was like one and two. Like I'm not going to play a three drop unless it's just like, you know, Savage.
Yeah. Now it's like no, yeah, I think drops, I think that's right, Quinn. Yeah, the unassuming space is definitely outside of the 1-2 spot.
Jeff, on that note,
mm-hmm.
you do have something outside the 1-2 spot.
I do. I mean, I really should have grouped this together, and I think I think far and away the most unassuming card of 2022 is Fable. It went off the radar for so long, and like, you know, people were posting like there's some pro tour or something that happened. It was still like a buck until like a couple weeks later, and people were like, oh, this is good. And it does like everything, and really just in the spirit of trying to be a bit of a contrarian, I wanted to choose something else. For same set, I have to shout out Touch the Spirit Realm, which, you know, everybody's favorite Oblivion Ring, just with a little flicker EOT channel thing on the back of it. I mean,
which is obscene, by the way.
Yeah,
I just want to say,
like, much play at all until Initiative was taking off, and I think this is something that was added in by Eddie Zamora, humans Eddie. You know, unlike the other Eddies who are not human, this is his addition to, you know, the Stompy deck, and really it fits in so well in like an Ancient Tomb colorless mana base, and the ability to not just reset your initiative cards or save them from stuff, but also just like fuck with other people's stuff. Because it's not an instant speed flicker or like an instant speed return, you get stuff end of turn. So you can like, you know, end of their turn, cycle it and it's gone for like your whole turn. You have the mana. You can get rid of a germ off of equipment. You can do so many things with this and people can't counter it. People can't really play around it most of the time. And it's just this dorky little like uncommon, you know, and it rules. It's so good.
This is like, there's a lot of things you'll have to like presume here, but just like in general, presuming D&T gets good again, like it's a deck here. Like I'm going to go to a tournament. I know how to play D&T. Would you consider running like a copy of this? Cause it seems like it does a lot of stuff for you in D&T. And also, like you said, there's like stuff for your opponent that you're just like, oh, I could like,
I don't think it's good enough to see playing D&T because honestly, playing it in initiative, the amount of times you cast it are extremely low. The 3 mana cost of it basically doesn't come up that often. It does come up sometimes, but not that often. And saying that makes you think it would be like, okay, then maybe it's more relevant to D&T, but you need to have the possibility of casting it and having it be effective. And D&T, you're usually too constrained on mana. You want to be porting. You want to be, you know, wastelanding people or doing other shit. But there's for sure going to be some in my D&T box.
Yeah. I think it's also the fact that, like, D&T, if it's not Vile and it's not Swords, you're probably not playing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, there could be some weird world where you're saying, oh, you
there's
know,
no Thalia attacks playing on the channel end.
Yeah. And it could be like, you know, they're, it's your way to like flicker their torpor orb and then go nuts or something. Like it could kind of fill that role as well. So
also it's very fun when people bring in Container Priest against you and you're just like, yoink, goodbye, your thing.
Oh. Jeff, you kind of blew up our spot, but McBain and I were both in agreement on Fable of the Mirror Breaker. I think McBain, he also alluded to this. No one knew it was good till everyone knew it was good. I think it's the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm. I think it was the same universe, but like the total opposite outcome of Oko, where a lot of people missed Oko and it was like, again, like this powerful 3-drop unassuming card that doesn't immediately take the game over, but takes the game over. And Oko went down like the dark universe realm that we never want to talk about again. But Fable, like, I think it's a legacy card and it's played in a lot of other stuff, but it allows you to play a lot of different games. And the fact that it's not just like slotting into every single blue deck is also an added bonus.
This leads us into, I'm gonna skip ahead of it. It's okay. Favorite deck rejuvenator. Did you steal these topics or did you come up with them off the dome?
This is just, I don't know, maybe it was some weird osmosis thing, but it was more just out of my back great, of my head somewhere.
Great topic. Favorite deck rejuvenator, though. I'm assuming this means we're in agreement because I had us all down and now just this Fable of the Mirror Breaker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking directly in like the context of Painter, where Painter has got a lot of tools over the last couple of years, some of them in 2021, but there's just a lot of issues playing, I think, Mono Red Painter and McBain, but he'll probably speak to this more eloquently than I can. But the things that I have experienced is I'm constrained on mana and I don't have card selection now that top doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And this does everything. And also when it flips and if the flip side lives a turn, protects your Painter Servant by putting the option of a second Painter Servant for 1 mana into play. But like, you know, if your opponent doesn't force evil this, you start making treasures. And then you rummage away. You know, if you need lands, you rummage away spells. If you need spells, you rummage away lands. And then again, like the flip side, the Kiki Jiki kind of wannabe side is extremely strong in a deck where you don't run any legendary creatures. You're now running Fury as well. Copying a Fury with the Evoke trigger on the stack is fucking insane. Just does everything that deck really like wants to do, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And because you have like such a powerful combo plan, if your opponent forcibles this, you're like, great, 2-for-1. Sure.
Yeah.
Play a painter, pass.
Yeah. Yeah. Just going back into my old man time machine on the painter piece, like top was really amazing because it gave you that filtering draw option, but it also gave it to you on turn one. So you could you could keep like a turn one hand with just one land and a top and be like, I can work with this. Whereas this is much more of like this, you can get into the early mid game and start to develop and pressure multiple lines of play, which Painter was always, I think, is a very powerful deck for doing that. And Fable and Saga, both recent additions to the Painter deck, really allow you to do that and kind of both threaten and move forward with your Painter plan, but then also kind of present some alternative things that if they aren't dealt with, you're also going to win that way. I also like the fact that like Fable has been tried in several other decks. Like I even think back to Allie, who threw together like a lands version. And just like the rummage effect on lands is basically always going to be good. Treasures are kind of fine. Wasn't amazing, but it was still a thing. And like you can play that. And then there's some control decks that have been playing it. I'm sure it's going to pop up in other spots, but it's just a cool card. And it's also played as like a 2 or 3 up in show and tell right now. So all around, I think it's just a sweet card. And the fact that it's not a 1 or 2 mana spell, I think is what really makes it for me, where you're just kind of drawing that game out a little longer. You're getting more time to develop and you're not just snowballing really early.
It's coming down in turn 2.
In some instances, sure.
Most of the time.
but it's not a 2-mana spell.
Yeah, like there's deck building constraints that go around it. It's not just a 1 or 2-mana spell that is extremely powerful.
Yeah, but I think a card not too powerful for Legacy. I'm sure there's a situation where people roll their eyes. To me, it's not like a heavy eye roller versus, you know, just to like kind of try and put aside my bias. Urza Saga, I still think, is an eye roller as a counter example. I don't know. I think it's like a good magic card for like the power level that we kind of exist in. And yeah, that's cool shit. If you get 2 going, end of turn, just making goblins.
That's the thing I wanted to say about it too, is like it is very strong, but also like the backside doesn't have haste. Like, you know, it's coming down, and if they get to go through the whole motion of make a guy, attack, you know, draw cards, attack, because you only attack once by then, and then, you know, flip it, attack, like, you're up a lot, but it's still, like, solvable. It's not like it comes down and immediately makes a copy of something. Like, that dorky 2/2 sits there for a whole turn before it can do anything.
Yeah, you have a lot of opportunities to interact with whatever part of it is going to hurt you the most.
So it's very cool. And I don't think you mentioned it either, but like Mono Red Stompy, like outside of Unlicensed Hearse, like this alone kind of brought that back into the metagame, because a perfect thing you can do with an Ancient Tomb and a Mountain, or, you know, and you can afford to go all in on this, or relatively all in on this, because you can make up for it by pitching your extra City of Traders or Chrome Moxes or whatever, and you get things. And like you can do in Painter, the stuff you're copying can be nuts. Like making a second Rabble Master, making a second Fury, like you said, Caves of Chaos Adventure, like whatever. Like, this does so much for Painter, and this does so much for Mono Red Stompy.
Poor elves, a deck I have never had any bad thoughts about, really. Even when I get beaten by it, I'm just like, elves, you ain't playing elves, like, great, sure, you got me. When you copy a Fury against elves, like, you play one Fury against elves, when you make the second Fury against elves, like, on the fly, it's just like, oh, that's gross. Moving forward, I thought this is another good one, McBain. Favorite role player.
You brought the positive vibes out for this.
Yeah. McBain? Interesting. I don't know if you want to read it like it's written or.
Have you, Jeff, have you ever lost, like ordered cards from a store and lost them like in the mail or had them like not delivered properly?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's come up. You know, like it happens to everyone, but with my favorite role player of 2022 that was released in your favorite set, if you get Boseiju who insures, you can ensure that you won't get your cards lost in the mail or your money back. And then they resend you the cards. It's fantastic. And Boseiju who insures is an excellent role player in one of my favorite decks, lands. It gives you a lot of, and there's a couple other decks that play it, but it is a fantastic role player that kind of gives you, again, it's like in many ways free, but it just gives you like these random outs to like just weird board states. And it's fantastic. And I've never lost a card since in the mail. So there's that as well.
It does seem like the role that it plays is it's free to have in your deck and it makes you not lose in a lot of spots.
Yeah.
It's a good role.
Yeah, there's a couple of times where someone's like, hey, here's this crazy enchantment. And you're like, oh boy, just going to get rid of that.
It also does like one of the best things you can do in lands, which is like ghost quarter lock somebody by like, you know, yep, low back passage, you fucking nuke your next land. Like, what do you got?
I honestly haven't done that yet, but at Eternal Weekend in round 4, I think, I got paired against blue green Omni, which is like any kind of show and tell deck is absolutely atrocious for lands. And game 3, I get a pretty rock star mulligan to 6. And I go Mox, discard stage, Mox, discard stage. And then I tap out and I go to cast Life from the Loam. And I'm like, you know, just rubbing my hands together. It's like, let's do this. I am getting this game. I am gonna win this. And then my opponent goes, response, surgical, you're 2 stages in your graveyard. And I like the wind came out of my sails and it was a very bad time. But I actually managed to win that game. In no small part. Because
you've Boseiju'd Omniscience.
In no small part. Because Boseiju ensured that my opponent
sorry, I didn't mean to
couldn't use their omniscience. So I actually set up this like board state where I had Krakus in play. Like mid-game, I crop routed for Krakus. So I could have Krakus against an Emrakul that was going to come down, but then I also had Boseiju in my hand the whole game. And I just like never tapped out for my Boseiju mana.
Oof.
Also known as one mana because Boseiju was eyeing over at Krakus, who was in play, was like, what's up? I'm only going to cost 1 green. And between like keeping those 2 things going and a couple other things, I was able to, well, it's only creatures, I think, but
I was fact checking you in real time.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see in your eyes there.
It does work on merit lays, which is the sickness.
Yeah. But just like having those 2 things up, I was able to kind of like successfully navigate that game in a spot where all my stages were gone turn 1 and my loam basically didn't do anything for a while. But
that's sick.
As a fashion over form man, I love that this is like put, I mean, not that like Omni's a deck right now, but like push people back into like the Cunning Wish release the ants kill. It's like, oh, you can't go sorcery speed. You wait for them to try and Boseiju when you ponder, and then you like get them.
That brief moment where I played a bit of Modern online, getting to Ren and 6 Boseiju was just gross.
We're not into the confession part of the recap yet, so we don't have to talk about you playing Modern. we can talk about this. It's the very end. We talk about our sins, and then we say a little prayer and atone for them. But I'm going to move on to my favorite role player.
Yeah, I want to hear what yours is.
This is another role that's questionable.
Well, I think when this card came out, I was like, oh, this is a problem. It's not good. I'm sure I've said it on this podcast. I think I also overreacted to Poseju, who has ensured so many things. Kappa Cannoneer. It's power. I think it's fine on a power level basis. It's kind of stupid. Like, it runs away with the game, but it only really goes in one deck. And I think it's kept eight casts, which is not, you know, like a menace in the format. But it's kept eight casts like semi-relevant because you no longer just get like completely bodied by Meltdown. Like, I think it make it like in as things have played out, and this could change if there's bans or new cards get printed. I don't know. Something Kappa Cannoneer, that's like the worst thing that's happening to me in Legacy right now. And I think like that deck without this at this point in time would be like pretty unplayable with like blue red Delver just like taking over, and like, you know, they would just keep it down by being like, well, I'm gonna add up to four Meltdowns in my sideboard if I need to. And like, what are you gonna do?
It has been interesting over the last few years to see this blue stompy deck evolve. Like when we had Urza Saga or Urza Lord Artificer, whatever, come out, and Saga come out, and
people playing just Mono as it Painter. Changes.
And then there was like the Echo of Aeons, and it really evolved over time. And I felt when Kappa came out, there was definitely a lot of like, at first it was unassuming. Like, people are like, this is good. I don't know if it's good. And there was like quite a bit of debate about it. But then it definitely just, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face by a Kappa Cannoneer. And it's a pretty powerful card, and it has kind of settled that deck and concentrated the list. So it's definitely being a role player in that regard. It is very terrifying when it gets down on the board, though.
The Ward 4 is probably unnecessary. That's one thing I'll say.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, Jeff, to lead into your pick, I put this down and then I read yours. I was like, oh shit, that's good. So I'll let you go with that one.
Sure. So I marked down another card from my favorite set of the year. Twinshot Sniper, which is just another sick little utility guy. I mean, 3 and a red for a 2/3 reach goblin. Artifact creature goblin that comes into play and shocks something. Channel for 1 and a red, shock something. This card rules. It's in a lot of painter decks as like a one of. I think there's a few mono red like stompy lists that'll play like maybe one. And you know, goblins will play like one probably. And it's just this card you can have in your toolbox, and it's perfect. You know, within Painter, you can do all kinds of sick, just like weld it in and out.
Discard like and then weld it in to make something for four. Oh, so good.
It's so good. And then it itself in play, like, does things like 2/3 reach. Like, that's sick. You can trade with a Delver. You can shoot something. Like, it's super cool. You look like you have something primed, McBain.
Every time I see this card, mm-hmm. and I really just read it all and take it in, I'm just like, oh, this card is so sick.
Yeah, it's what you know Bone Crusher Giant wishes he was.
Yeah. Yeah, Bone Crusher is that like ham-fisted fire policy.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like, it's like the aliens meme or whatever. He's like perfection.
Damage can't be prevented on Bone Crusher, though. It's so sweet.
It's true, it's very funny. But no, it's great. Like, I've played it in Goblins, and you hit it off, like, every time you hit it off a Ringleader, you're like, ooh, yes, like, this looks nice. Or you put it in a play of like a Muxus, and you're just like, fire somebody in the face. Like, it's sweet. And like, also, Goblins being mono red, having access to like reach as a thing is also just very big. Card's super cool.
It does. Unfortunately, it's, I guess maybe it could work, but I was going to say Legolas is probably more green. But if I'm thinking ahead to like Lord of the Rings thing, this could be Legolas.
It could be.
Like, he's kind of just doing everything and arrows are going everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. This could work. This could work.
I hope they just listen to the feedback and like power it down for that set. And like, Legolas is just like Elvish Archers.
It's definitely not happening.
They just reprint Sol Ring immediately. It's already banned in Legacy. It's fine. The one ring is just fucking Sol Ring. Okay. Do you want a better ring? We fucking printed it.
In modern, it's legally like, modern now.
I think we've seen the spoilers, Quinn. You're breaking your NDA here, but the
like, I think Legolas is going to be what true ring is there? It's Sol Ring.
No, it's obviously going to be Sol Ring. The oh, what was it? You said Elvish Archers, and I was going to make the old comment of it's going to be the alpha version of Elvish Archers, which is misprinted as a 1-2 first strike.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than a 2-1 first strike, which is obviously way better. But anyway,
God damn. This
is random trivia knowledge.
You know, sometimes yeah, Twin Shot Sniper is, the elves get nerfed and Orcish Oriflame is fucking OP. So correct. They had to do it back in the day.
What does Oriflame do?
It just costs
one of your creatures.
Sick.
And yeah, it just costs 2 mana.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to change this slightly from the notes because I think McBain, you added favorite legacy format definer. I'm just going to say legacy format definer, which is how I answered the question. Because I mean, I play this card a lot. I don't know if it exists. It's fine. But we're going to get a favorite card later.
For sure.
But just legacy format definer. The thing that like you were like 2022, this is the card. Jeff, I think people who know you are going to know what this is, but I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah, I think without a doubt, coming in hot at the end of the year, I mean, it's White Plume Adventurer. Specifically, I mean, the initiative mechanic. But White Plume's kind of the poster child for that. I think if you look at the entirety of the year, it's a story that still shows Delver dominating like everything and never really getting pushed out even when something else exists. But this being a card in a deck that makes up like 1,000,000,000% of any given metagame since the deck has been like set, I think it would be extremely unfair to not say is defined 2022. I mean, the initiative itself,
Delver got all those cards in 2021.
Yeah.
And they like, just remained good.
You look at the initiative itself and it's like, oh, let's bring some of the cards in onto Magic Online. Only the Popper ones. That'll be good. And then Popper's fucking completely ruined for like a month or whatever as every deck just converges on the plan of putting in an initiative creature as fast as possible and then doing nothing else. And then
argument for unassuming as well.
Yeah.
No one looked at this and was like, this is going to bust Legacy wide open.
And the problem too is like, we did at least one, maybe two Baldur's Gate drafts. And when you're playing the format, you're like, the initiative's sick. You're like, I got a land, and then Quinn hit me, and then I fucking punched him back, and now I scryed. You're like, this is so cool. It's like keeping the game moving. But then once you put that in a little 1v1 format, ooh, it's dumb. It's really dumb.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens as a result of this.
I think it works great in multiplayer.
Yeah.
Multiplayer. Monarch as well works great in multiplayer.
I felt initiative was like an A+ mechanic in multiplayer. Especially in like a powered down, like limited format where it just kind of keeps things moving and it like creates its own little sub game that you're actually kind of like totally fine to play.
Anything that keeps stops momentum, you from right? being like, I don't know who to attack, I'm going to roll the dice is a great mechanic to add to a multiplayer format. Like, I'm not sure I should like fucking attack someone.
And you attack can never change
like, got glasses. You don't like glasses? Get them.
You can never be like,
breaking
you
the hitting? New. You're breaking the NDA for the new D&D set where you have to roll a dice to decide who to attack. Yeah, you know, it could be argued. I think it almost should be argued that probably the most unassuming card or type is definitely the initiative cards in 2022. Even after like Popper got broken in half. The vintage and legacy players are like, yeah, that's fine. Go play with your Popper cards.
It's difficult because they didn't put the cards in Magic Online. There was a few people posting on Twitter deck lists were like, oh, I've been fucking cleaning up at you know the weeklies. And I know JR had a list loosely together probably since August, I think he was tweeting about, you know, I want to put this together. And the deck still, it was more defined now than it has been, but like it's still kind of searching for that perfect home. I don't know. It's funny. And they still don't have all of them on Magic Online, you know. Like I know Elliot wanted to put something together with a shitty Green Sun deck with the green guy that is a 4-mana, you know, 3/4 that taps for mana or something. You know, really doesn't matter. It just makes the initiative. Just because the mechanic is fucked up.
It takes the initiative.
There's also a 4-mana black card that takes the initiative.
There's multiple
that is not online.
There's
yet.
Yeah, there's, I think the popper ones online, there's a rare that's really bad, and then there's an uncommon that's actually decent. And I think the rare and the uncommon aren't on Magic Online.
I do appreciate the iron, or just like the weirdness of like, well, you coded that one, like, why can't you just like,
right, you've done the hard part.
I don't know,
you've
copy triggered, paste over, like, what's
made
what's
something so hard that about triggers this? The initiative. The rest of this is it has lifelink. Like, fucking yeah. Get on it.
I mean, I don't blame Daybreak. I actually think you've been doing a really great job overall.
Mm-hmm.
Especially comparatively. Like not being able to keep up with the
yeah.
velocity of releases
and like just the spaghetti code that is Magic Online, like the fact that you can have one art of a card that works properly and then one art that doesn't makes no sense. Like, how is this developed?
That's like hey Google, what is technical debt? Like, let me show you.
But I do think you're right. Online. I think you're right that specifically calling out White Plume Adventure is as the definer is probably correct, or is correct in my opinion. If anything's mm-hmm. going to get chopped or snipped out of that deck, it's going to be, I believe, that card. And even alluded to by Gavin on a recent podcast. But
oh, Bane, you have a different one.
Yeah, I have another one. It's kind of been a definer, or it's waxed and waned since it was released, and that's Minskin Boo, which has a just for the listeners, we've recently learned how to use emojis in our Google Doc for show notes, and there's a hamster and a ghost emoji beside Minskin Boo, so that's fantastic. But Minskin Boo, it some people hate it. I think it's actually like it's found its home, like almost specifically in Legacy, in that it's a format where you have a lot of like lightning bolt effects, you've got Krakus effects, you've got, I don't know, just a lot of count, like it costs four, so there's like days and shit like that. That's a thing. It's I don't think it's that amazing. And the decks, like, I kind of like the control deck that gets to play it. And the fact that, like, Depths and Lands can play it as well is cool. So I don't hate it. And I think it's kind of cool. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the lore or anything like that. I think it could be totally just, like, something a little bit more Magic-y card-y.
Right, so my hamster token.
Rather than a fucking hamster.
This is maybe the most like, and for anyone who doesn't know, I'm a person of color.
Yeah, this is Irish POC.
I yeah. I think about control decks the way that like conservative white people think about people of color is that they should have to work hard to have success. And Minskin Boo is not a card you have to work hard for. Like, every once in a while, you're like, oh, they've got Krakus. But, like, it just gets out of hand so fast.
It kills so fast. And the fact that they draw cards off of it is insane. And also, like, I know it's a different format completely, but the fact that it's in, like, the Arena Cube and the Alchemy version that costs five, and it's still just completely fucked up.
It's the worst card in Vintage Cube. Like, if I get beat by Black Lotus, I'm like, yeah, Black Lotus, motherfucker, you got there. If I get, and maybe that's definitely like a, you know, bias thing. But I, like, when I get beat by Minsk, I'm like, fuck. When you get beat by Minsk off Black Lotus, the worst.
Quinn, why don't you close this out for format definers in 2022?
I think it kind of fits with Minsk. Definitely fits with White Blue Adventure. Fits with Painter, fits with Kappa Cannoneer. I'm trying to look back to see like what are the things we mentioned that it fits with. Probably some of these Warhammer cards that cost a zillion mana. Ancient Tomb.
The
I've never
best card
seen
in
more
Legacy.
Ancient Tombs than I have this year.
Like, oh yeah,
in the format that is still defined by Delver, where people are just like, I'll take two. again, because cards are so powerful and you want to get to it now, the new sweet spot, 3 mana, which is what I was kind of alluding to when you were saying Fable of the Mirror Breaker is not a 2 mana spell, which is technically correct, but it's a turn 2 spell. Sometimes it's a turn 1 spell. And I'm begging you to 2 for 2 me with Force of Will. I don't know. It turns out Sol Ring's a good card, even if it shocks you.
I just used the handy search function on MTG Top 8, and 31.5% of decks currently play Ancient Tomb.
Oh my god.
Here's a question.
Whoa. Okay, hold on.
Yeah, sorry.
What percentage do you think is Brainstorm?
Oh my god, is it less? No, it can't be.
35.
At okay, least. Hold on. Let me just get a comparison measurement here. Okay, so in 2019, Brainstorm was in 55% of decks.
Perfect format, no questions.
And 2018, it was 54. So I think 2017 was the peak of that. But
Brainstorm's washed.
It's got to be like 2014 Miracles era, right? It has to be like peak Brainstorm, right?
I think it was like 2016, but there was like GPs where it'd be 32 of 32 Brainstorm. Like, it was just like, if you're not playing blue, get out of here. Boys, we've dipped below the 50% mark.
Ooh.
Do you want to know how far we've fallen?
Yes.
44%.
44.
It's currently not even the most played deck or most played card in Legacy right now.
It's the most played card in Legacy right now.
Legacy for no, what? Force Will? Because Force Will's in blue stompy decks too.
Yeah, you got it.
God well damn.
Done. I think if Force Will's the most played card in your format, you have a serious problem.
Yeah, that's not great.
What if I told you the most, like, I think like lesson number one is like more cards are better. What if I told you could throw a card into the garbage forever? Maybe
the second played card ends up being Force of Negation. We're also in very bad, very bad spots.
Also, I apologize for saying throw a card into the garbage for anyone who plays Food Chain. Sometimes you get it back. I think we're going a little negative, so I'm going to keep it on that train.
Yes.
If you're the type of person who doesn't like this, we're going to go least favorite card, but then we're going to do favorite card. But we're going to start with least favorite card, McBain.
I went with Cardza.
Cards. And that's sticker let the cards. Hate flow through you.
Stickers. Fucking stickers.
Like, what if stickers are what leads you to the dark side? Where Jeff and I have existed for basically this whole podcast run.
Yeah. The fucking stickers. Like, to me, that was just like a mechanic. Like, again, it went back to the whole Acorn thing and Unfinity, and it should have just never been legal. And in my opinion, it was just like Hasbro trying to maximize their value on every single set and have more cards be purchased. And therefore, we have to deal with stickers in the format that we enjoy, which is bullshit. That's all I have to say. Fuck stickers.
It's like anything more like variants, I'm not super down with. Jeff, I'm going to like kind of prelude your pick with being like, I'm sure you've seen this because you're the most online of us all. Have you seen like GIF or it's like WCW NWO era and Sting takes off his Sting mask and he has another Sting mask underneath?
Yeah.
When I read down to this and I was like, okay. I mean, I respect it, but like, all right. So I'm going to let you go now with your least favorite card of 2022.
What I wrote down here was Fable of the Mirror Breaker with an asterisk, which is that I will admit that I said it's a good role player and it's rejuvenated a lot of stuff. And look, there's a lot of good things about it.
No, that's not what you wrote down. You're in the wrong
We're on section I.
We're doing the bad number shit. Two. We're being mean.
Cut this. Cut this.
God.
Okay.
How dare you say that shit about Fable?
Yeah, it's like, wait, what happened? You changed
your mind. I had it primed. My least favorite card 2022, you had a good setup for this, is White Plume Adventurer. Once again, though, like, I played the deck. I love the deck, but it's because I get to be the bad man, which I don't often get to be. But the initiative is fucking dumb. It's really fucking dumb and shouldn't exist in a one-on-one format. It's so fucking stupid. And the amount of games, you just play this thing turn one and nothing else happens. It's done. Max Thorsen just called it in the other day, the white doomsday, except your opponent loses 10 life. And I think that's pretty accurate.
I'm going to round us out. And I want to preface this by saying there was some like meme going around that was like, look at your boyfriend's Instagram search page, because that's where like it gives you like the suggested posts. And I guess it's based on like what you interact with.
And oh, interesting.
Like young woman on TikTok who was like, well, my boyfriend, it was all like these like very good looking women. And I was like, what are you doing on Instagram? And Liz, who was confident about this, like someone shared it in her girlfriend's group chat. She was like, hey, show me your Instagram search page. I'm like, okay. She's like, oh, that's what I thought. It's all dogs. So I told that story because I want to like really like tell you how much I love petting dogs, looking at dogs, playing with dogs, just thinking how dogs exist and they're great. I fucking hate Comet Stellar Pup with all of my heart and soul. He's a dog that's going into space. That's so sweet in concept, except this card fucking sucks. I don't like how it's random. I don't like how you just activate it and then the thing happens. So like your opponent might roll the thing where they get the thing back from the graveyard. You can't surgical in response unless you just guess they're going to roll it. I don't even know what number it is.
I feel like it's the outcome for this is always like Mother Runes too. Like they just like activate it. You're like, oh shit. I mean, yeah. You can't predict anything, but you know, you're like, it's that feeling where you're like, I pulled the trigger on this thing I have to do.
What I do?
Doesn't matter.
To me, the thing that makes Magic good is the game about like informed decisions and there's randomness off the top. You know what your opponent has, there's some unknown information, and this just makes like it just like cuts to the heart of everything that I like. It cuts through the heart, of everything that I love about Magic. And to make things worse, it's a dog, which I generally love from my heart. Speaking of love,
just a random trivia question. Hold on.
How many sixes do you have to roll to kill someone?
No. What was the first dog in space, which is also the same? It was Comet's design name when they were originally coming up with this godforsaken card.
I know this because my sister named her dog after this dog. So I'm going to let Jeff guess.
I should know, but I can't remember. And it's going to be right there as soon as you say it.
Laika, the original space pup.
Oh.
I was trying to think of some like pun on it sounds like a this.
To, like, that's pretty good.
So I couldn't,
like, he might not have got that.
No.
Guaranteed, no, he wouldn't have got not. That. But everyone who would know the thing would be like, oh, he's fucking. Yeah, so. I wish I was quick enough on that one, but all right. Quinn, why don't you set us up for the next one and then maybe pass it off to Jeff to start.
Well, I'm gonna let Jeff go because he already spoiled this.
Yeah. Well, so it's yes and no, right? I mean, to mark this down here, you have a favorite card of 2022, right? That's our, let me be clear, that's our category we're talking about.
The thing you you personally
so
like. Like, it can't be wrong. It's your favorite, not the best.
So, I mean, I don't want to go on a rant here.
Like, are you going to choose White Plume for this, too?
We're actually making a good time. You can go on a rant.
No, what I had said before about Fable when I was going down some negative bits, that was primed for this. It I think, is an extremely sweet card that I like playing with. And it's like, it feels weird to call it my favorite, but I just have two minds of it. Like, I have a lot of fun playing with, you know, I make my own stupid goblin. I chuck away my bad cards. I get a thing like that rules. And then my opponent does it. And I'm like, this sucks. So I don't like how it's so like homogenized. It can go in a lot of stuff, but I do like that for something that does that, it isn't like inherently so insanely strong. And I think on the balance, it comes out with a lot of fun gameplay, and anything that makes more goblins is also good. And also as a second tier, White Plume Adventurer, the Initiative are some of my favorite cards of 2022, because again, being the bad guy is a good fucking feeling. Sitting down at a tournament table and your opponent sees your turn on play and they go, fuck, that doesn't happen to me in my Magic career.
Well, usually it's fuck yes. Like, just gonna buy.
Your opponent's like turn on mother and she's like, oh fuck, okay. Ancient tomb, go.
Like, this is the strongest basic planes has ever been, and the deck's only playing two.
Is it down to two now? Yeah. I thought it was on three.
Two is the standard.
Everything pitches a Chromox, it's all good.
I'll go with mine, and then you've got some good ones to kind of close it out, Quinn. Again, for me, it was like Fable Asterix, so I went with like a slightly different one. Maybe partially availability bias in that I've been playing with it recently, but again, I think Minsk is a pretty cool card. And Quinn's going to hate me forever for that.
No, you really got me by coming in after I said your favorite can't be a wrong choice. So you really fucking trapped me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There you go. I just think it's sweet. I like how there's just so many different little axes that it can be interacted with on, as well as be a powerful card, rather than just the ones where it's just like, I'm going to do my thing and that's that. Like, there's nothing you can really do about it. There's not too many interaction points. Like the little weird things of, it's not really a good, great example, but like Capo Cannoneer, like seeing itself and then getting a little bit bigger. You're just like, does it really need to do that? Like, can't Seasoned Engineer just have three toughness and die to bolt? Like all those little things, it feels like Mintz kind of falls in that spot as well as be a powerful card. Like on the podcast, we shouted out at the beginning, the Accumulated Nonsense, they went on and just basically said, like, you know, I think Minsk and Boo was the card that killed Jace the Mind Sculptor, like, was the final.
Oh, I was just going to say something nice about this card until you said that. And I was like, fuck this card.
Well, what is the nice thing?
It's the Slash Panther of 2022.
Oh, I think just like dies to bolt is Magic as Virtual Garfield intended.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's you spend four mana to play your thing. You're like, oh, I got a hamster trigger on the stack, which again, I don't like the lore aspect of it, but like, I just invested four into this, and your painter player is like, I'm gonna bolt that on the stack. You're like, fuck, or bolt it when it's in play with the trigger on. Like, it just, or even like the, oh, I'm gonna put counters on it. You're like, okay, I'm gonna kill your hamster now or whatever. Like, it, even the fact that you have to like activate the minus and then you can kill the creature when they're trying to do it, is like, it's just all like the little interaction points are there.
Interaction points, like every upkeep to get a hamster.
Shut up, Jeff.
to blame,
you're the one steal, playing fucking Initiative. So
to blatantly steal from This Week in Legacy, are you an XJ Cloud or are you an animal hitter that would throw a hamster?
Plead the fifth.
I would only throw it if I gave it super strength first with Invigorate, which is a thing I did that felt pretty good. I'm going to have to be honest. It becomes Grizzlebrand.
What every hamster should aspire to.
Mm-hmm. Quinn, you've got, I think, two here. What are you? Yeah, what are your two favorite cards? You cheated, but if you're being overly positive, I'm totally fine.
I mean, I backdoored it. Encourage this. Quinn was up front with it.
Phyrexian Dragon Engine, which is three colorless for a 2/2 double striker. It has an earth for two red and three. And when it comes into play from a graveyard, enters the battlefield from a graveyard, you may discard your hand and draw three cards, which means sometimes it comes into play off of a goblin engineer or goblin welder, and it is simply a free ancestor recall. Oof. And there's nothing I like more in Magic than drawing cards. It's a 2/2 double striker, just kind of beats face sometimes. It's just like Painter has become a little weird from, and again, like with Mukbane, if you excuse my kind of relatively like limited knowledge of like how to negotiate Painter, I think somewhere it's gone from a thing where I'm like, oh, like I'm trying to do kind of like one main thing, and I might have some weird, like, you know, you get there with monkey beats or something, to a deck that has a lot of angles. And I find myself, you know, playing a goblin engineer and putting this card in the graveyard a lot lately. That threat of just like being able to, you know, even unearthing it for 5 mana and drawing 3 cards, it's just does a lot. But again, like, not like particularly unfair. Like, I think it's like well costed from the fair side, and then like if you have welder to exploit that, like, it's kind of, that's what welder does, right? It's a 1/1, you can kill it.
Yeah, even just like the fact that it's something you can run out relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but it's down, like its effect is all of a sudden a downside if you're going too quick, or generally a downside.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, you don't want to have a whole bunch of these in your deck. You don't want to do that. You don't want to, like, it has a certain tension to it that I think is really cool.
If you have like an active welder or an active engineer too, it's very hard for your opponent to block. I mean, it's hard to block anyway because it's like a 2/2 double striker. But like, you know, if they want to trade, and or even just like, you know, they have something big that can, you know, big Murktide or something, it's like, do you want to do this? Like, do you want this in my graveyard now, or are you gonna just let me hit you for 4?
I do. So this is kind of going back to something that James Onions was playing recently, but I think there's going to be this somewhat tier 2, not that great, but extremely fun style of deck that is just a whole bunch of goblin engineers and welders, and things like Fable, a whole bunch of these dragon engines, and just like all sorts of shenanigans, and then like throw some Chaos Defilers in there as well, where you're just up to no good and everyone's okay with it.
And you die to Leyline of the Void. But in game 1,
no, that's when you just like hard cast your Chaos Defiler and kill their Leyline of the Void.
I guess that works too, yeah. My second one, because I cheated, is the Triumph of St. Catherine. I think large part because I love to say St. Cathy as a nickname. But again, another card pushed. I don't feel like it's broken. I think this is the influence of, you know, Magic Online. It's not on Magic Online. And so it just feels like a kind of brave new world still, even though it's been out for almost half a year.
So it's pre White Plume Adventurer.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know this card, it's a, I don't even know what the actual cost is. Like 5, 6?
6, I think.
That's 5.
It has a miracle cost of 1 and a white. And it's a 5/5 lifelinker. And, you know, in a brainstorm deck, obviously, you're miracling this card. And when it dies, you take the top 6 cards of your library, shuffle it in, and then like put the cards back on top. Yeah, I think, again, really cool mechanic, which is something I think they introduced kind of a lot of those in Warhammer 40K, and just like a cool card. It kind of like fucks Delver too, which I think is also a thing that like legacy players who aren't Delver players are like, yes, good card, fucks Delver.
Quinn, what happens if my opponent has this and then it dies?
I believe it goes back into like if you have it and I own it, mm-hmm. I believe it goes back into like my library.
Hmm. What happens if you have this and you have like 4 cards in your deck and then it dies?
Oh, there was a thing that came up about that. I can't remember.
You exile everything and it doesn't shuffle.
Yeah, I think you die. That came up.
I think Max was asking. Because
Max was trying Doomsday. It in Doomsday, and I think that came up, and he was like, I just died.
It's very fucking funny.
I'll have to check on that, but yeah, I believe that's what happened. It's
very funny.
But again, to me, like a card that you can kill you. Very funny. Because yeah, there was like some there was a bit of talk for a while, and I mean we haven't seen it really tested enough to come to fruition, where it was just kind of like, oh, I'm just gonna like make these fucking 5/5 lifelinkers,
yep,
and then beat face with them, and then, you know, if I can't kill you, then I'll just, you know, cast like that circle. Was kind of the premise.
I think it's a sweet card, and just the deck that you've been playing, Quinn, with it, where it has like stifles and triumphs and
Esper Sentinel.
Esper Sentinel. I think anytime that like a blue white deck is playing stifle, I'm generally on board.
Yeah, that's cool.
You can also, because of Esper Sentinel, you can, your opponent casts a spell and you ask them, or maybe they can't, pay for the Esper Sentinel tax and you get to draw a card. And then you can miracle St. Catherine on their turn. And that is one of the sweetest plays in Magic, I feel like.
It's a triumph, if you will.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's, yeah. It's both a triumph and a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
To take us home, we've kind of like looked back on 2022, the year that was, looking forward to the remaining. Is it a leap year?
I don't know.
I'm going to say it's not. The remaining 362 days of the year, what do you want to see in Magic the Gathering? McBain, you're up.
Like, I'm actually like a negative one here and you're a positive one on this, but I am concerned about Modern Horizons 3 and I don't want to see it be a pile of shit. I do appreciate and I enjoy Lord of the Rings, and I hope they get the right balance of flavor and I'm not sitting here dying from like Lambus bread. I'm like, oh, come on, I got to draw my Lambus bread or else I'm not going to be able to get out of the dungeon. Like, I don't want to do that. I hope they get like, you know, there's orcs, there's, you know, goblins, there's enough lore in there that like, you don't have to start name dropping bullshit that's going to be playable in formats that like, I don't want to be saying Gandalf.
The only like broken shit I'll accept is if they make Orc Tribal like viable.
Yes, please.
Like if we're just under like the Orc tyranny, you know, as we know, you can survive that, but I accept that as an outcome.
Yeah. Well, we've already got adventuring orcs, so why not?
Oh, yeah,
why not breed the Uruk-hai and just, okay, I'm going to stop. But
this is like the nerdiest podcast I've ever gotten, which is shocking.
The other pieces of being a steaming pile of shit that MH3 could be is just straight up overpowered, where it's almost like what was that video I was watching on just like how bad video games have become in terms of becoming just like this business model where it's like, oh, did you get the battle pass of MH3? In order to continue playing your game, you must buy this battle pass. Like, I really hope that it's not just like, I need to go buy four of all these cards. I don't want that. I've really loved all these sets that have been coming out so far this year where it's like, hey, here's a cool card here, here's a cool card there. And it's not like, you know, biting my tongue in initiative. It's not like, hey, your deck is now invalidated and it just doesn't work and you can't adjust and revise and stuff like that. I don't think that's a reason why you have legacy
eternal
still
formats around. In general.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, it's about being additive rather than just like dominating it. So hopefully they've learned their lessons with MH2 and they said, hey, this can be really successful, but like, it's not great when Modern, for example, is just dominated by literally Modern Horizons 2 Tribal. So,
do they ever have a butt on the end of that? I think the most recent Mark Rosewater thing is something really successful, period. Are you aware they've made more money than ever, McBain? Why would they do anything else?
Hopefully because they are thinking a little bit more long-term about things. But
if this there's is one, my this spot is gonna to go outside of Magic, negative. But if there's one thing we've learned over the 2.5 years this podcast existed, is that humans are great at that.
I thought you were going to say 2.5 millennia, but
also that. I was going to go next, but Jeff, I feel like you dovetail best after McBain.
I just put hoping Frodo.
He's not a piece of shit.
Yeah.
You just love Frodo.
You want Frodo in 2023. Is that what you're saying?
I just want to see some Frodo in 2023. Maybe some, you know, I'll take some lambast bread. That seems cool. What if there's like a Frodo planeswalker that pluses to make lambast bread, and then you can also plus to turn that into a 3/3 orc?
Oh my, if they make a Frodo planes, like, come on. Frodo, like, I'm again,
Frodoco.
They're pushing me into a Vorthos guy to be like, that is not, like, how do you get a spark? I don't understand.
No, the food tokens are obvious to just lambast bread, but they're still just food tokens.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have
Oko, what is Frodo's color identity?
He's green, blue. And he has a -5 to switch an artifact or creature you control with a creature your opponents control with power 3 or less.
Does he have a 6-pack?
Yeah, I was going to say, does he have like an 8-pack?
Look, Frodo's been working out. The power of the ring works in mysterious ways. Seriously, though, I mean, I echo everything you said, McVane. I don't have high hopes for MH3 to not be a piece of shit that eternally rotates all eternal formats. But I don't know. The flavor is like in line with stuff, so I'm hopeful that, you know, I don't think Battle for Baldur's Gate in general was, I've got to take this back as I say it, too much of a failure. There's a lot of cool stuff that was at play there, and I think some of it was in a good spot. So interested to see what comes out of it. I think very weird.
To be fair,
yeah.
The initiative is bad in 1v1 formats. I'm not
sure. If they're designing
super upset.
Yeah.
If they're just like, sorry, we made this for like multiplayer formats, like that's a different kind of problem, you know, than like, oh, why'd you test this for a format, to be fair, not a lot of people play. When they printed like cards in Unfinity and were specifically like, we thought of Legacy, and you're like, well, you didn't think very fucking hard. That is just like, there's no need for you to say that. We're like, you know, if they fuck up with like True Name Nemesis is cool, and I've talked about this before, and cool in Commander. It's not cool in Legacy, but like, okay, I get it. And I think that's a little bit different, but
all I can say is Leyline of Binding. Like, at least we have that as a solution.
So, do you know if for the Lord of the Rings set they have like the actual Lord of the Rings IP, or are they stuck like Amazon having like, you know, a napkin book somebody wrote about the Silmarillion?
Oh, like you're going deep. We're going really into like nerd hour right now.
The Amazon show, that's the thing, right? They didn't have the rights to make like a proper, like, this is the Lord of the Rings. It was like, you have the extended bits with which to write.
Yeah, there were like certain things they cannot mention for whatever reason.
So is this because
I watched a YouTube explainer video?
Yeah, I obviously haven't seen this video that you guys have. So,
you know, there's going to be a white, like, uncommon named Second Breakfast, and it's just like Second Sunrise. Like, eggs are back. Yeah, I don't know. It's probably going to be fucking funny.
All right. Shockingly, I have the most hopeful wish for 2023, which is also crazy. I think it's like a 9 on the fucking storm scale. I want one playable infect, like the keyword on a card. And I think this could happen not in Phyrexial will be one, but there's commander sets with every set. There's secret layers that they just kind of announce out of nowhere. They can do this pretty easily. Like, if it was like standard sets only, I'd be like, you know, unacceptable, I get it, you don't want to put this, you know, put this mechanic into standard, and that's like pretty fair, but like, they can do this, they should do it. They printed like multiple good storm cards, and it's called the storm scale.
Quinn, would you accept a great infect card that was printed into a secret layer as like a Rick promo that was also like some IP that you hated. So one, you could only get it through a secret layer, and it was expensive and exclusive, but good and playable. But it's like embiggened cubed. Like it's just like you don't like it. But at the same time, you're like, you know, any port in a storm will take it. Like if this is what I get,
no, I think it's like reverse. I think that would maybe quit Magic. I'd be pretty close. I'd be just like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah, the new like My Little Pony expansion secret layer, one of them has infect.
Yeah. Even like Commander, I'm like not stoked on, as I mentioned with like the 40k stuff, which again, good cards.
But I think that like Commander is a good
place to put something you can't put other stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, it's infect and it's Commander. Like this might not be exactly, or I guess, yeah, it's still 10. Yeah.
It's weird to put it alongside Toxic though. You know, to have like Toxic.
But I mean, if you're making poison counters, right? If you can make it faster in Commander. I think the issue that maybe holds it back is that poison counters are actually kind of toxic in Commander as well, because it cuts the clock down. You know, it's actually worse. You know, in regular Magic, cuts the clock in half, but all the infect cards are like, you know, like very small idiots.
There's no I'm pretty sure that this doesn't exist, but like an infect card that like you poison them and then it like slowly ticks up on them. Like they've been poisoned.
Oh,
like that doesn't exist, right?
What's that like Pokemon thing when you get like
poison?
Oh, is it? It's just poison. yeah. Charmander's been poisoned. It keeps fucking getting shit done to it.
Uh-huh. It'd be cool if it was like
going to hate this.
Well, I'm just designing infect cards now, but like one where it's like you play it and like each player takes poison damage and then it like continues to tick up each turn. And it's like, so in a game where no one's playing with infect cards, it's so just like in 10 turns. Sulfuric
Vortex of poison.
Yeah, there you go.
That's very strong, but I love it. I love where you're going with this. I mean, a Johnny, I guess, is like the closest thing to it.
Yeah, but I heard you just ult him, and then it says you don't draw any creatures the rest of the creature. Game.
Yeah, play Brainstorm Ponder.
I do want to say, too, like that sound, and it might have sounded at the time like a bad beast, right? That was so fun for me, because my opponent was also just like, what the fuck's happening right now? I'm like, I don't know, man. And then we both left, and I lost, and that's fine. And it, like I said, like I've also just been like, Invigor Berserk, I kill you. Force of Will? No, I also have Force of Will. It was just like, it was hilarious. It was the best. But I think a Johnny is probably the closest thing. Yeah, I don't know. I think Proliferate exists too, right? So there could be some like, I guess there's like a
beginning of your upkeep.
Sulfuric Vortex, it just proliferates. Could exist. That could be a card that I could see them printing.
Mm.
Where it's not like, you know, specifically infect, which would be like pretty, you know, it's like a 10 turn clock kind of thing with nothing else happening. But just to be like, each turn you proliferate. Could be a thing.
Hmm. We'll anyway, see. Apparently I could just go on all night designing infect cards, but we're not going to do that.
We're going to end on even more positive notes. I'm going to start this one. No, I'm not. Because I have to look up... wait, is full names? Like, no, it's not, because it's fine. It's not like... I'm going to look up full names. Jeff, you go first.
Sure. I wanted to shout out friend of the podcast. Well, friends of the podcast, I suppose, Taylor and Kristen, who we all know and love, have announced somewhat recently that they are expecting twins, which is insane. But I think they're most psyched about having a full Commander pod in the house at all times. So sending lots of love to them, and I'm sure a lot of hopefully mental stress relief over the next couple of years. Also, I didn't write this down here, but I need to do this because I was putting together my my 2022 Magic Wrapped status. I think last year was nothing because there's no fucking paper play, but last time I did this, I played against Colin the most. This year, my most common paper opponent, frenemy of the podcast, Elliot Fisher,
Still boasting a 72% win rate over this guy.
That's not hard, man.
Wow. I was going to be like, if you had a losing win rate, we're going to put Elliot on the podcast. Just kidding. I don't want to do that, but it's not even a question.
Yeah, we played it 7 times this year, which is great. And then a magical line. I played against Uri Whitecaps 4 times. Clean 50% win rate. So, yeah. I've been putting these stats together, and I haven't grabbed them all yet, but I did some brief math over, like, global win rates on stuff, and I think I put it in the Slack. But for the entire year, for every deck I've played a Magic Online, and this includes some very, very bad decks when I was playing around with Displacer Kitten and, like, other stuff, my Blue-Red Delver win rate is 27%. Just the most popular deck in the format, I have a 1 in 4 chance of winning against.
It's a good thing that leagues are noise, as I've heard.
All right.
You're Rye White Cats. If you'd like to be on the podcast in place of Jeff, reach out to us. You're 50-50, so you just have to kind of give us a bit of a resume.
One more.
Which is a bit of a transition into my That's Guess, which is Elaine, who no longer has her last name on Twitter, so I will not say it, but Ori Tart on Twitter, who once tweeted us saying, "Can I be the 4th member of the Canadian Threshold? Elaine, I'm sorry to let you know that you cannot, because you're good at Magic." And if you listen to any episode of this podcast, you understand that prerequisite to be on this podcast is to be pretty mediocre, or sometimes, like me, bad. But just, I think, a great member of the Canadian, to keep a relatively local Magic community. If you have been to a large tournament in Canada, chances are Elaine has been one of the judges, if not the head judge. And also great follow on Twitter. Just great. From what I can tell, great person. I don't know her very well, but also just like
all vouch for a good magic, person.
Magic personality to follow. And so I just wanted to shout out Elaine. McBane, take us home.
Yeah, I guess continuing on the vein of legacy podcasts that actually have good players, Billy Mitchell, Michael Mapson, and the Dark Depths podcast. I just want to shout them out. With leaving a legacy, kind of winding down and retiring, hanging up the gloves, going out to the white gray heavens and the shores and the lands of Numenor, or I don't know if I can. with leaving a legacy, kind of winding down, Billy and Michael reached out, and Gavin was able to go on their podcast and kind of continue on that winter tradition of just doing a bit of a recap and a check-in on legacy. And it was, one, well done, and then two, it's always a pleasure to hear kind of Gavin talk about his perspectives, and also just be a very engaged and inquisitive person when he was kind of talking through with them. I felt they could have daggered him a little bit more on initiative. It almost like came across, I felt, as like they're like, well, we don't want to like totally dunk on initiative, like he's honoring us and blessing us with his presence here, like it'd be rude to just like slam the door in his face. But yeah,
what this is, because as soon as you said this, I was like, how much, in your opinion, McBane, would Jeff and I have to change our attitudes for us to be able to convince, like, to send an episode to Gavin to be like, do you want to come on our podcast? It's a good time Magic podcast.
Yeah.
It's a good time, gang.
Yeah, that ship sailed long ago in the second age.
Like, we could write, he's not going to go backwards. We could just, like, record a good one.
Oh, okay, okay.
Or a best behavior.
There you go.
He's not going to listen to episode 10 or some shit like that. Where we're like, oh, ran in 6.
Yeah. Why is your logo trapdoor spider? You're like, no reason.
If he does listen to multiple episodes, like, guys, I actually heard it. It's like pretty shitty how you're like talking about this. I'd be like, joke's on you. Listen to 10 episodes.
Let's get Ian Duke to vouch for us.
That's true. but yeah, I thought it was great, and it was a welcome surprise. So if you are like, I'm probably sure many legacy podcast listeners, there's a lot out there, and if you haven't given the Dark Devs podcast a listen in a while, I would definitely recommend that episode.
An excellent listen all around, the Dark Test podcast. And also, they tweeted at us shortly after EW to say we should have some matches, maybe some like old school rug versus like old school depth. And so stay tuned in a year when you hear about how he went like 0-10 versus the Dark Depths podcast.
Well, our podcast contains like one Delver player and they're extremely washed.
I mean, I hardly call McBain a Delver player. No offense, McBain.
It's a compliment.
I'm taken.
Anything else before
I we have
say
one,
goodnight on this year
one
closing?
One point of order. McBain, you referred to something earlier as somebody, a gif of somebody, an alien, saying perfection. Can
Prometheus?
You describe to me the gif and what alien Prometheus? Movie you think this is from?
Is it not an alien movie?
Are you talking about Michael Fassbender from X-Men saying perfection?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Definitely is.
I was thinking of him. I thought it was him. Well, was it Prometheus where there's like the android guy?
I don't know.
Doesn't he play that? Okay. We got to start this out before.
I just wanted the podcast Twitter account. I was like, oh, this is dad posting again.
Wait, is that on the... That's a tweet?
He responded to somebody with it.
Okay, he is actually the android in Prometheus.
Does he say perfection?
Well, it's fucking android, and he walks around with a stick up his ass. So, like, I don't know. Came across as right, but maybe it's just X-Men. Okay.
When you said it, I was just like, uh-huh, yeah, that's a thing, I'm sure.
And then I learned something today. I thought dogs laid eggs.
All right. Well, this episode is brought to you by Dogs Laying Eggs, the movie Prometheus, and Vessi Footwear. If there's nothing else, thank you for listening, and we'll see you all in Two Thresholds.
Yeah, catch us in the Instagram ads. No, don't put the sexy eyes on it.